Why don't we go ahead and begin? I know Commissioner Saltzman has an excused absence today. This is the Wednesday, January 25th afternoon session. This is a holdover item from yesterday that we didn't have time to get to. If I could please ask Carla to call the first and only item today. After roll call.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Udaley?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Now the first item and only item.
Item 86, adopt the North Northeast Community Development 5-year Action Plan and direct staff to implement the investment strategies and outcomes identified in the action plan.
So this is coming from the PDC, and we have Kimberly Branham here and some others to testify, but I've been provided a couple of overview points that I'd like to go ahead and share. Over the past 15 years since the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area was first established, many of the city's investments in North and Northeast have improved transportation infrastructure and transit access, revitalized neighborhood, and created new developments with both affordable housing and commercial developments. Those investments, however, have not brought the hoped-for benefit to existing residences and businesses in the area. In fact, many of the investments sent market signals hastening displacement instead of protecting residents against the impacts of gentrification. The goal of this plan is to bring opportunities for economic prosperity to those who've been marginalized by past urban renewal. It focuses $32 million in remaining tax increment funds to foster multi-generational wealth creation and community assets. I'd like to thank all of the community partners and the Portland Development Commission staff that have worked tirelessly over the past year to come up with this plan. We have a lot of hard work ahead, but it's important and it is necessary, and it's high time we make these kinds of investments. So without further ado, I believe Kimberly Branham and Tori Campbell are presenting today. Good. And I understand you have invited testimony, and if that's the case, I would just encourage you to invite up whoever you have invited, and they can introduce themselves, or you can at your convenience.
Good. Great. Well, good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here today to talk to you about the North Northeast Community Development Initiative Plan. I'm joined by Tori Campbell, who's our Interim Economic Development Director, and I'm going to provide some context about how we got here and the process, the key considerations that we discussed, then went into the plan's development, and then Tori will discuss the goals of the plan and what we hope to achieve in some next steps. Next slide. So our planning for the North Northeast Community Development Initiative began soon after the TIF lift, which increased the affordable housing set aside from 30% to 45% citywide. The impact in the interstate urban renewal area, as you might recall, is more significant in that the remaining resources are now divided 70-30 the other way. So 70% now goes to affordable housing and 30% is available for other business and community development objectives. So approximately a year ago, we convened a number of the members of the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group with an interest in Northeast Portland and posed the question, how should we spend the remaining $32 million of unallocated tax increment finance dollars in the interstate urban renewal area over the next 5 or so years? So the project advisory committee formed in January and met approximately once a month for a year. In the spring, staff analyzed the URA plan to assess what had and had not been done, and interviewed 35 stakeholders in one-on-one interviews and in group settings. This analysis led to a discussion draft, which we shared with the North Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy Oversight Committee and with over 200 community members who participated in community forums held on October 6th and October 20th, 2016. We updated the draft plans and incorporated input from community members and then shared the drafts with our board. And so this today marks the culmination of about a year-long process and the beginning of the implementation. I'd like to take a moment just to thank all of those people who dedicated time as advisory committee members. You see the names here, representing a diversity of backgrounds and expertise development, business development, longtime community interests, as well as Bishop Stephen Holt, who was a member of the North Northeast Housing Oversight Committee and provided alignment between what the investments that the Housing Bureau, the investments of the Housing Bureau and those made by PDC. So as a reminder, when we talk about the Interstate Urban Renewal Area, we are talking about the significant portion of the commercial areas and some residential areas in North and Northeast Portland shown on the map here. The TIF resources we're talking about must be used to make permanent physical improvements within these boundaries. Examples of the types of investments that can be used, that can be made are tenant or storefront improvements, new commercial or residential construction, parks or transportation infrastructure. So we can't use this, for example, for working capital or workforce development programs, even though those are obviously key tenets of widely shared prosperity and creating economic growth. So just by the way of context, to ground the closeout plan for the district, we took a look at what investments had been made to date. And what you'll see is that about $150 million have been invested over the last 15 years, with the largest investment in infrastructure, so with the MAX light rail, the yellow line, and streetscape improvements like along Denver and Killingsworth. Improvements were made to parks. $6 million was invested in parks, the most notable of which is the Dawson Park renovation. We also invested in four major projects within the property development portion of the pie chart: Vanport Properties, the Heritage Building, Fremont Partners, and Killingsworth Station, each receiving sizable investments. We also invested about $10 million in property development grants to over 400 clients. So these are storefront improvement grants and green features grants, development opportunity services, and then put in about $18 million through 136 loans in business development. By comparison, during that same time period, there were about $1 billion of investments through the private market. So we took a look through the Bureau of Development Services and the records that they keep, and the $67 million or so of commercial investments that PDC participated in really is dwarfed by what's happened in the private market with the $1 billion of private investment over the same time period.
Kimberly, could I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Help me understand the but-for argument here. Is it your contention that private sector development resulted from the PDC's investment? Is that directly leveraged alongside, or is that just general statement about what happened in the corridor?
I think it's a general statement. By comparison, for example, we put in about $95 million in the Lentz Urban Renewal Area. You see significantly different outcomes. I think that urban renewal sends a signal to the market, but I don't think it is. I don't think it can alone drive the market. So I think the $1 billion was an investment that we didn't anticipate happening as quickly as it did, and is not wholly. You know, the PDC's investment isn't wholly responsible, or even largely responsible for it.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful for me. I appreciate that.
So you see here a reflection of the investments over the next 5 years, where 73%, or about $108 million, will go into set-aside policy affordable housing, and about 27% will go into business development, redevelopment, and infrastructure. This is in recognition of the fact that you have serious affordability challenges in this district, and so this is the area where we're seeing the most significant increase within the urban renewal area. So by the time the URA spending is completed, 50% of expenditures will have been invested in affordable housing and 50% to other development priorities. And just also to note that the resources that we have in the second half of the district, or in the next 5 years, is roughly equal to what we invested in the first 15 years. So there's almost $150 million of unallocated resources yet, or resources to be expended over the next 5-year period. Our assessment also evaluated demographic shifts that have occurred since the establishment of the urban renewal area, and you see here that between 2000 and 2013, the African-American population in the interstate corridor decreased by 33%, while the white population increased fairly sizably. There was also a decrease Hawaiian Pacific Islanders and Native Americans, and a no increase within the Latino population. Also, during that same time period, the median income for African Americans fell sharply by about 31%, bringing the median income household for African Americans to just about $24,000. The Latino median income remained stable, but was still 27% below that of the white households within the area. So what that means is that now 1 in 3 African Americans in the urban renewal area have incomes below the poverty level. And nationally, this is not a local statistics, but we know that the local statistics mirror this one, which is that the staggering wealth disparity in between white households, African American, and Latino households actually is even greater disparity than the income inequalities. So you have a median white family has about $140,000 in assets. The median African American family has about $11,000 in assets, and the median Latino family has just under $14,000 in assets. And so, these are assets including homes and savings minus your debt. So, what you can fall back on or pass on to the next generation. This disparity is driven by inequities in home ownership and income from employment and business ownership, as well as educational attainment. And it's really in that order, so home ownership and then income and then educational attainment.
So could I ask you a question? You may not know the answer. I read something recently. It was a study that seemed to suggest that not only is the disparity in home ownership the leading reason, it is by far the leading reason. Is that commensurate with your understanding?
Yeah, I've seen it ranked in that order, where it's home ownership first, and then it's unequal pay for equal work, and then it's educational. But I haven't seen the most recent information about what percentages. I just have seen that it's in that order.
Well, it showed that the top driver for intergenerational wealth creation at the household level was home ownership and home equity.
Yep.
And so I don't know what my point is, except to say I'm glad that this plan seeks to address that.
Yeah. And I do want to mention that this disparity is the result of racist institutional policies, from redlining to practices by banking practices and other things. So there are reasons as an institution who has linked some of our investments to private financial markets, we have underscored or at times exacerbated some of those dynamics. So we've learned a lot in our assessment of what has worked and what hasn't worked and for whom over the last 15 years. And the plan going forward that Tori will speak to really seeks to address what we've learned as an agency and with our partners in reflecting on the last 15 years. And here's what our major takeaways are. The first is that we overpromised and underdelivered. So there were a number of things that the urban renewal area plan called for, like investment in the light rail and parks improvements and those kinds of things, and we delivered on those. And we even delivered on some of the kinds of projects like Vanport that people called for. But we fell short on other goals, specifically around business growth and creating opportunities for long-term residents. We underestimated the market forces. We were not quick enough in making the kinds of investments and that would have potentially reduced the negative impact to longtime residents and business owners. And so as a result, you'll see that our plan is clear about the magnitude of the impact that we think we can make. We do not believe that with $32 million we will reverse the trends, but we do believe we can make a quantifiable impact. And you'll also see that we have a sense of urgency about getting these resources on the street. Finally, PDC was not sufficiently intentional about who benefited from the investments, and so the closeout strategy for this district is really laser-focused on supporting those people and communities who have not benefited from the economic expansion in the area. So that's the context. So, Tori, do you want to talk about the plan?
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor. So I'm going to walk you through some of what the feedback was in terms of our community engagement. As we mentioned, we had an advisory committee that walked with us over this last year to really help shape the plan. Also connected to that, we did we had 35 interviews with stakeholders. We also held two community forums that saw about 200 individuals come out to actively hear and engage in this process along the way. And as you imagine, with any good kind of collective process that involves many voices, that you should have kind of a diverse sense of where people are standing on issues, that it shouldn't be a monolithic kind of championing of one way of looking at it. And so I think for us, there was both rigorous debate, both and input, both from within the community forums, as well as also within the advisory group that got us to this place. It required the opportunities to talk about what might be the best option to move forward. It also required some level of compromise. And in some instances, people feel like, I don't agree, but I will still move forward nonetheless. I think I just wanted to share that in the space of the honesty that I think that went into this work, that there were strong feelings across the board, as we would hope. And so with that, I'll walk through some of the community feedback that we heard and how that helped to shape and inform the way in which the advisory committee, along with our staff, PDC, began to finally develop the final plan. Some of the things that we heard were, all of these various conversations, was one was the need to increase the investment in home repair and home ownership and investment in accessory dwelling units for middle-income housing. Again, it was out of the spirit of what is wealth creation and how do we drive that? What does that look like? And a lot of it had to do with ownership of property and assets. And it's not necessarily what one gets in the immediate generation as much as what they can pass on to successive generations that creates the kind of wealth that we're seeing within our country and also speaks to a lot of the disparities. So to your point earlier, definitely owning a home has been the primary driver within our country historically for wealth creation to take place. And that was one of the things that was raised over and over again. How can we use some of these $32 million to help with home ownership, repair, and also adding to the value of those homes? Community feedback also said an increase in investment in individual property ownership and redevelopment, as well as business ownership and growth. Again, calling out the importance that oftentimes what helps with wealth creation within one's life is not just the job that they do necessarily 9-to-5 and assets, but also the starting of a small business or the continuation of growing a business even after the retirement of their initial job that they might have done for 20 or 30 years. And so, again, it was looking at what are kind of a suite, if you will, of tools and opportunities to help individuals develop their sense of wealth creation. So there was a real call out for that. We did have an elimination of something, which was a proposed investment in traded sector businesses that create living wage jobs. There's a portion of these dollars that we're initially going to suggest go to that, which basically is creating benefits and incentives for companies to come and land in the urban renewal area, and in turn it would be an agreement that they would hire and diversify their workforce accordingly. And many of the individuals felt like though that was important and jobs are clearly incredibly important, there was not enough, structure around that to ensure that that would be the outcome that we would see in the long term. So the idea was to eliminate it, and that was done. And then the last one was initially, again, strong sentiments was many felt we should eliminate this, and there was also the other opposing view that says that we should not. And so the approach of the advisory committee along with us was actually to revise the final one, which was an investment in place-based cultural business hubs to ensure that projects provide opportunities for small, local, minority-owned businesses. So at this time, I'll walk you through what the plan calls out in terms of the dollars and how those dollars are to be allocated. As it relates to property ownership and redevelopment, we have called out $10.7 million to go towards those efforts. We're roughly believing around 44 property owners could benefit from that, and that would be in a variety of ways, a mixture of both grants and loans for both small and large-scale projects, both in terms of purchasing property as well as redeveloping existing property that many individuals currently own. The next was support for small business ownership and growth, and that was $9.2 million that we will apply to that. And we believe roughly around 55 business owners can benefit from that. That also includes a mixture of both grants and loans, both in terms of the purchase of properties or the improvement of existing storefronts to help them grow in terms of their business viability within the urban corridor. The next area looked to help in terms of investing in new and existing home ownership. And with this one, some of the unique elements around this is these dollars will actually be given to the Portland Housing Bureau, and under their guidance, they will then instruct how the program guidelines and also following all the fair housing and state and federal requirements to dispense these dollars. They already have a program that you are familiar with. These dollars we felt would be important not to simply go to the current program, which really helps to support individuals that have 80% or below the median income level, but looking within Northeast, it was saying there are individuals who currently live and work there that actually have great jobs, but just the housing values are so much that even with making 100% of the median income level, they cannot afford to live there. And so these dollars would go towards a program that would help with individuals who want to purchase a home who make 80% to 120% of the median income.
Mr. Campbell, may I ask you a question? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine.
So the funds are transferred to the Housing Bureau. I just want to be clear. The criteria are already well established.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes. They would be using their preference policy to...
The Housing Bureau here is using established criteria, and it's using its channels of distribution. Okay, great.
Let me complicate that. The answer is yes and no. Okay. Because this is not 30% set-aside money.
Right.
So it's a yes or no. I mean, we have one set of rules governing tax increment finance dollars that are part of the 30% set-aside, or in this case, we did a TIF lift, so it's going to bump up to, I think, 45%. They are prescribed by one set of rules. These dollars are not part of the set-aside money. So the Housing Bureau is not circumscribed by those rules. They have more flexibility. We don't typically focus on 80 to 120% with the 30% money. So it's still, and the short answer, Mayor, is it comes to your bureau to be allocated according to the guidelines that apply to this bundle of dollars, but still has to be fit within a citywide set of priorities.
And that is the understanding from the PDC's perspective.
I think we really appreciate the Housing Bureau's partnership on this one. I think we felt like it would be duplicative for us to go out and try to find the same partners to administer resources at this 80 to 120% median family income level. So the Housing Bureau basically said, we already have the infrastructure, we're willing to flex on this point, and that the partners would be available to
do. That's helpful. Truthfully, I was being selfish. I wanted to clarify my role in this process, and I think between the commissioner's comments and your comments, that clarifies it. Thank you.
And so within that program, it would be the expansion of the down payment assistance, also the expansion of single family home repair, and also expanded proposing a program by the Portland Housing Bureau for 17-18 to support the development of accessory dwelling units and cottage homes to those within incomes between 80 to 120% of medium family income as a way to bring more affordable housing units to the market within the urban renewal area, and as a way to begin to support multi-generational families. And so those dollars play out to be $1.6 million that would go towards down payment assistance, $1.6 million that would go towards the single family home repair program, and then $1.8 million to go towards a proposed program to help with accessory dwelling units.
Are there any structural or sideboards on particularly the accessory dwelling units? Obviously, if they're rented out for Airbnb, that's more income for the homeowner, but it's also not really increasing our supply of affordable housing. So did you have some of those discussions, and is there any?
I don't recall a ton of conversations that got to that point of the impact of that. Obviously, that's something that we would consider, but there was no strong sense of how that would play out.
I have what I hope will be a quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
With assistance to existing homeowners, I'm assuming that is funding to make essential repairs, maybe so they can refinance the home and get a... So what I've seen in the two Northeast Portland neighborhoods that I live in is when a parent or grandparent dies and the house is transferred to perhaps multiple children or grandchildren, no one person can afford to buy that home, and the home is lost and the asset is divided among many people. Or perhaps it does it is inherited by a single owner, but they can't afford the mortgage or the second mortgage. So I'm just curious if you've considered ways that we could support that succession of ownership so the family can retain the asset. It's not necessarily about repairing the house, although often it would be. And I'm sorry if that's a little too far afield for this conversation, but since we're here.
Well, and Commissioner, that really was the genesis of a lot of the conversations that we heard, and this was the focus on housing and home ownership really came from those stakeholder interviews, and that story that you described was a lot of what was talked about. So the first portion of supporting home ownership is really trying to put a tool for the daughter or granddaughter to purchase the home, even if she makes more than 60% median family income. I can't say that we don't know yet whether, you know, how well it will be used, whether 80 to 100% is the perfect level. So I think we're going to continue to be really engaged with the Housing Bureau and with the partners who administer these resources to get it, to try to get it right, to solve for that. Okay.
So the remaining areas of investment would then also be advance the community livability projects, which is $2.5 million. And that would go towards, again, building prosperity by supporting the growth and development of sustainable community-based organizations that both drive economic development outcomes as well as serve the communities that have experienced displacement or have not fully benefited from the economic opportunities that we have already spoken to. And then the last one is the investment in cultural business hubs, which was one of the ones, I said there was the most wrestling around of exactly how does this play out and what is the appropriate amount and how do we ensure that the outcome truly does benefit the community. And so the compromise of sorts was that we would we actually put less money into it, and we also put some conditions on it. So the $4.5 million could potentially benefit one or two projects. The conditions is that we would give space over the next 3 years to allow a project to come to light, and if it met the criteria which was stated and the oversight committee, which we will establish in February, feels good about it, then the dollars would then be allocated towards that. If there was not a project that met those particular goals, then those dollars would then be reallocated back into some of the other buckets, such as small business ownership and growth or property development or ownership. And lastly, with all of this, I think it's important to note that the success of this requires that we not only engage the community in a very robust way in terms of how we roll this out, but that also that intermingled through everything, there is ongoing education and support to help individuals figure out what is the best move for them in terms of developing a strategy to access the programs, as well as working in concert and partnership with many of the partners that we currently know, and also seeking out new ones, too, to ensure that these dollars in this very small window get applied appropriately to the audiences that we intended to. So our next steps would be finalizing and coming back to many of the community members that we talked with over the last year who helped to inform the process. On February the 23rd, then we will begin that work of establishing an oversight committee in February that should be set up by March to hold PDC accountable as well as evaluate the investments. And then lastly, we will release a notice of funding availability by the spring of 2017.
Great. Thank you. You have some invited testimony, unless anybody has any
immediate... I have a question or two, Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm sorry that we held you up yesterday. And if there were people in the audience that were inconvenienced yesterday, we apologize for that. The hearing went on about an extra 2 hours longer, I think, than we anticipated. A lot of people showed up to testify. I have a couple comments and a couple questions. The first is I am delighted that we're looking at how to maximize the impact of the $32 million. And I'm going to be honest. One of the things that caused me heartburn about the North Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy is to fund it, we took the money out of economic development and we moved it to housing. And that caused me a lot of heartburn because the community had said over a long period of time that economic development was a key priority. And it wasn't just storefront improvement and things like that. The thing we consistently hear is access to capital. So we funded a more robust housing strategy by taking money away from another community priority. And it was done in the light of day. But that trade-off to me, pit two things against each other that we value equally. And in fact, you could argue, depending on your view of the world, that a very effective housing strategy is to build prosperity so that people have the resources to be able to buy a home and rent a home. So we had a collision of values. Now we have decided to lift the amount of money for that's allocated to housing. We call it the TIF lift, and that's reflected in the additional $32 million that's going to come back to the council to debate how we spend that money. But you're asking us today to focus just on the sort of economic development piece. So, a couple of things. First is when your report identifies a number of disparities that we have to get our hands around. African American is the largest, and then you identify disparities within the Native American community, Latino community, Asian community. Can we assume that as you set up the oversight committee, that there will be broad representation of communities of color that have experienced disparities in this area?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Number two, I want to ask you a philosophical question, Kimberly, because we've all been on a lot of committees. And committees are great, but one of the challenges of committees is that sometimes it's harder to maintain the focus. And so in a committee structure, you may have people say, well, I've got an idea and I have an idea. Then the dynamic is to reconcile the ideas. $32 million is not a lot of money. And so the question I want to ask you, as we evaluate these recommendations, was there an alternative approach presented by the committee or members of the committee to really move the needle in one area by betting the house on, let's say, business development or something else or access to capital? Because, again, the challenge you have is you're taking $32 million, which is not a lot of money. You're dividing it up into five programs, all laudable. But it's different than betting the house on one of those programs and saying we want to see systems change. And so was that part of the process of evaluating a big investment in one priority versus five smaller investments in other priorities?
Yeah, it's a great question, Commissioner. There were a lot of conversations, and so this does represent, I think, a pared down, right? So we originally started with three objectives. So there was an objective, and Tori's going to have to jog my memory, but there was an objective around access to employment, there was an objective around culturally relevant spaces, and then there was an objective around wealth creation. And really through the conversations with the committee and what we heard back from the community in the open houses was the exclusive focus needs to be multi-generational wealth creation. And so everything that we're doing, all of the tools that we should employ need to be focused on multi-generational wealth creation. So in some ways, I think we have a number of different tools that we're setting up, but it's all around creating wealth. And so that's where you don't see a focus on employment or access to employment. And the investments in the cultural hub has gone down about 50% from what was originally proposed. So, you know, the other thing that I want to just acknowledge is if we do really deliver on this plan, it will be at a magnitude that is almost equal to the level of investment that we made over the last 15 years. So it will represent a pretty sizable level of investment in businesses and longtime property owners. And so I think we feel like this is achievable. Trying to find double the number of businesses or double the number of longtime property owners, I'm not exactly sure whether we would be able to do that. So this represents what feels potentially prudent.
So I understand the dilemma. I mean, when I was first elected and Tom Potter asked me to lead the Housing Bureau, the first thing I learned is that the Bureau had made hundreds of small bets on lots of things and was, in effect, trying to be all things to all people. And as a result, it was very hard to measure success in any one particular area. So we said, no, let's focus our priorities and let's really show you can move the needle. I love the idea of supporting home ownership. Under this plan, it'll impact 20 households. Now, that's 20 households that would not have been impacted before, but let's be clear, that's a very, very small impact. And yet, if we are successful in stimulating a minority-owned business that is successful and starts hiring a lot of people, those people along the way are going to be homeowners someday if it's a successful business. What's the best investment? And I don't know the answer, but I worry that when we try to accommodate a lot of laudable goals with a finite amount of money, we end up undercutting or limiting our ability to really make significant progress in one defined area. And that's the trade-off, obviously. So thank you.
So we do have two people, if you would like them to come up. Kara Stoudemire-Phillips and James Paulson.
Great, thank you. If you could just state your name for the record, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Kara Stoudemire-Phillips, and...
And I'm James Paulson.
So I'll go ahead and start. So I served on the committee for, I didn't realize it had been a full year, but quite a long time. And as a person born and raised in Portland, grew up in Boise neighborhood, in fact, active in the Boise Neighborhood Association, where I serve as the treasurer for over 10 years now. And Commissioner Fritz has been to our meetings many times. Thank you. I immediately felt the weight and the importance and the complexity of serving on this committee from the very beginning. It was made up, I felt like it was composed of a great mix of people from the community, older, younger, different walks of life, different communities around the city, and then also our extended group when we met, they were open to the public. And we always had a really good group of, I would call them elders from the community that came to our meetings, and they sat in the outside of the circle and listened very respectfully, but then when it was time for them to have their input, they definitely did. And it was good for all of us to hear that input. I'm not as young as I used to be, but there were things that they shared that were very impactful to me. There were things that I had heard that had happened, some things that I knew for sure, but having had the opportunity to hear those things firsthand from those people that were there in those meetings, served on those committees, were here at City Council. That was very instrumental for me. So I just want to share that the impact and the weight and the importance was very great on me to be a part of this committee and to make sure that the plan that went forward really was representative of the community. The community forums that both Tori and Kimberly spoke about, those too were very eye-opening. And as Commissioner Fish said, I appreciate what you said about whether it's more important to bet it all on one thing. And we talked about that, as Kimberly said. We did talk about that in our meetings. But I think those community forums really did serve to let us know that if we did bet it all on one thing, there was going to be a lot of discourse and a lot of unhappiness. There's no silver bullet. Everyone knows what happened in our community. There's no silver bullet to completely right those wrongs. But I think this plan is an effort to at least help target those. Like we said, we started with three objectives and moved over to five objectives because as we got into those community forums, we saw that there was much more. As we dug, there was much more work that needed to be done. And so even though it looks like there's 55 people that 'll be helped here, 40 or 20 here, I think the Oversight Committee, those next steps of the work of that Oversight Committee is going to be very important in who is composed of that on that committee and the structure and the makeup of that Oversight Committee and the rules that are put in place because we will be able to target. I feel like that we definitely will be successful even though we look like we have five objectives and maybe we should have few. I do think that we can be very, very successful in targeting and being successful. I did want to talk a little bit about the plan and the things that I really liked in the plan. What I really liked about the process in working with PDC on this is the fact that we did bring in community forums. As everyone said, I'll say I'm 40 and I've served on a lot of PDC committees over the years. I will say that this has probably been the most impactful one for me, where I think we're going to affect the most change. I served on many the ICARA grant committees for many years, and you know, you do a little here. It's $300,000, less than the $32 million, and you can do only what you can do. But this one has been the most impactful. Served on the Williams Avenue Committee and, like I said, Boise Neighborhood. But this one, I feel, is going to have the biggest opportunity to be impactful to the most people and that can start to heal some of those wounds.
Really nice to see you again. As Commissioner Fish said, we do apologize for having to change the date. I'm glad you were able to be here. Thank you. Thank you for your service on the committee.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for what is obviously heartfelt testimony. We appreciate that. Thank you.
You can also see it's a family tradition of service that you're referring to.
Yes.
Mother to daughter and all.
Hi, my name is James Paulson, and I also had the pleasure of serving on that same committee. And feeling the passion of the people on that committee. And one of the things that I want to dive into is something that Commissioner Fish kind of touched on a little bit, and that's the betting it all on one thing or spreading it. Because one of the things that we heard is the committee was like, oh, put the money more into people's homes and that sort of thing, and we don't need what we at the time were calling an anchor project, which now we're calling a cultural hub. And one of the things that it's very difficult to educate, you know, community members on is how TIF funding works and the inner workings of it. And one of those things, you know, the difference between grants and loans and the fact that grants are important to get out so that people can improve their properties and do different things with them. But one of the things that works really well with the loans is loans get repaid and then they can be re-loaned out. And so one of the things with the cultural hub is what we're looking for is really being able to pull together a dynamic space where African-American and people of color can build this space where people can come in and build their business, expand their business, and do these different things in a way in which they're going to build more long-term wealth. And as well, that's going to be based more on loans than grants. Now, there is a mix, but when you're building a space like this, that will allow for loan money to come back in to be re-loaned out again in the future. So then you have perpetuating wealth throughout time through different programs. And so that's one of the things, one of the reasons why we wanted to come back and take a closer look at how we were going to define this anchor or cultural hub, as we call it now. And as we said, if we don't have something in the pipeline in 3 years because we have a five-year window, then we're going to take a look at those funds and redistribute those funds to where we think that they're going to have a greater impact if we're not able to pull that together. So I just wanted to bring some clarity to that, that it's not as though we're like, hey, the community said this and we went in a different direction. It's more of trying to look at what the community said and how can we also apply the tools that we have available to us to meet the community's needs.
Sir, can I ask you a question about the cultural hub?
Mm-hmm.
This is something that has been talked about for some time. It's been branded differently. The different people have different visions. And I think it is critically important. And as the report notes, it builds off of successful hubs in other parts of the city that have a theme. And I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but as long as I have lived in Portland, there is a piece of dirt that has laid fallow. And it happens to be just to the north of what is today called the Urban League. And it was once the center, long before I ever moved to Oregon, it was the center of a thriving community. And one of the reasons I know that is that the gazebo in Dawson Park has a roof, and that roof was, in fact, the front section of a drugstore, which was at the corner of a thriving community. And if we are really going to talk about a hub and, in effect, healing a wound that has existed for a long time, Mayor, I hope you will seriously consider engaging our friends at Legacy Emmanuel over a project which could not only meet the goals of a cultural hub, as well as perhaps senior housing and a new home for the Urban League, but would write a different outcome, a different chapter of the history that is there. It's been talked about for a long time. There's lots of reasons why we've been told it will never happen. I think the mayor of the city of Portland has unique powers to bring to bear and persuasion in any conversation. But I think it's the missing piece if we're going to do this right. And I hope as a community we can rally around that vision.
Commissioner, you're absolutely right, because what I really hear you saying there is it's really going to be incumbent on partners coming together to really pull the space together. It's not the dollars that we've set aside here that are really the driving force. The driving force is really the people who really want to try and build a communal space and build a space that is welcoming to everyone and creates opportunity in an area for African Americans and people of color who have been affected to really build business back into an area. And kind of that space that you're talking about, I grew up a block and a half away from that, and I've lived my entire life as that as just a flat spot. And so I would love for anything that the city can do, partnering to work with Legacy on trying to develop that space.
Just as
an example.
Yes, and Commissioner, I take up your challenge gratefully. And I want to appreciate the testimony from both of you. I don't know if anybody has any more questions for the invited panel.
I was just going to say if that was a resolution, I had seconded. thanks for your presentations and to what Commissioner Fish said earlier. I agree it's a small pot of money to try to be spreading around like this. But as we talk about trying to right some of the historic wrongs and create opportunities for the African American community to come back to Northeast Portland, I have to wonder, what are they coming back to if there are no cultural hubs, if there so many of the businesses are gone, the community centers are gone, the churches have folded. So I think it's an important start. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Carla, is there any public testimony today?
Yes, I have four people signed up.
Very good.
The first three, please come on up, are Bruce Chess, James Faison, and Felicia Wells Thomas.
Very good. Thank you. If you could state your name for the record, please. And the clock is a 3-minute clock, and about 30 seconds from the end, it makes some beeping noise, and then when it gets to the end, it just beeps.
I won't take a minute.
You're good. Thank you, sir. And if you could just state your name for the record. Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Felicia Wells Thomas. Good afternoon, City Council and Mayor Ted Wheeler.
Good afternoon.
I already told you my name. I'm a longtime community member here in North and Northeast Portland. I'm here to urge the council to take some time to get a better understanding of what the community would like to see. In my humble opinion, I do not agree, and I am very offended that a statement was made that the community wanted to take the monies and put it in their pockets. That's just one of the statements that were made to represent the community, the African American community. Should this initiative move forward, I personally do not want to be associated by actions that do not benefit the community, nor is it representative of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Bruce Chess, and I represent Fallow Ground Ministries. When Commissioner Fish mentioned the Fallow Ground over in Vanport area, I named my nonprofit organization Fallow Ground because there are so many homeless people that are good people, but they've had a divorce, they've lost a job, they've gotten on drugs. And so now to bring those people back, to me, is development. We talk about real estate and things, but in reality, we can invest in people. And I'm here because for the last 2 years, I've been going around to missions, working and volunteering in missions. I've done all I can with what I have to work with. I do Portland Rescue Mission, the harbor on 102nd. I do Northwest Bible Training Center. And through a local church, Emmanuel, I go out and I actually hand out the food and feed. And that's really what I want to do. I want to help. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So this is why helping is important. And I came here today in hopes that there would be ability for me to develop a partnership where I can continue to work. I have short-term goals as well as long-term. I've been working over at Lewis and Clark with the football team, so when I get ready to go clean up Mississippi Street and paint all the tags and graffiti, I got some young, strong men that can do the work. They can push a brush, they can shovel, they can do the things that need to be done to make a green investment in the community. So I'm down to the end now. I'm looking for funding, I'll be quite honest. I saw $2.5 million up there for nonprofits. I'd like to be able to be in the running to get something. I'd like to also request, if it's any way I can speak to you, Mayor, one-on-one, can I get on your calendar, on your schedule? I would like to do so.
Very well, yes.
Yes, thank you so much. I want to help.
Kristen Dennis, raise your hand right there.
Okay,
she'll take your information. We'll get it done.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
for
you
the
so
good
much,
work.
Mayor. I want to help, and I'm sure that in many cases, people help from behind the scenes. Now, I might be out there handing out lunches, but there may be a partner in the background that's helping me to be able to stand out there and to do that. And my thing in life now is I'm retired, okay? I was an IT manager for Sharp Electronics over in Camas, Washington. I managed the sustained engineering department, okay? So now what I want to do is I want to give back. And the quickest thing to do is to feed someone to make them healthy. So thank you for your time.
Great. And I look forward to talking to you, and I appreciate the work you're doing, sir.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. You could just state your
name.
Hey,
good afternoon. My name is James Faison, and I have a company in town, a construction company that does commercial concrete and a small general contractor. I, too, wanted to piggyback on trying to find best ways for the money to be issued. And I think the best way for that money to be used is to create an incubator to house some contractors, small contractors, and to have not just office space but storage space, so they can that money. So as the money is being paid in for the incubator, as they pay their own fees and they all have some kind of ownership in that money is turned into something that can develop into something more for the community. I stand on the street corner every Sunday from 2 to 4, passing out flyers to kids and telling them they have opportunities to do, be in apprenticeships. You got alternatives. You don't have to fight. You don't have to be around kids that's doing the wrong things, that you got alternatives. Most of the kids have no idea that there's opportunity out there. So how do we get this opportunity and get this information to kids? I think if we had something like an incubator that people will buy into and have ownership in it, you know, they buy their space and they pay money back to the city. And the money comes in, it goes back out in other ways. It's not just money that you're giving away. It's putting something back into the community. Because you might as well face it, $30 million is not a lot of money. And it's not going to – once it's gone, it's gone. This is a way that money can keep on working for the community. And Northeast Portland, the truth of the matter is that property stuff is too high. That's why everybody's moving to Gresham. So how do you correct that? How do you fix something in the short term to help correct that? And that's giving people jobs and giving them worth. And as small minority contractors, we can do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
The last two who signed up are James Posey and Sheila Holden.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Sheila Holden. I'm Regional Business Manager for Pacific Power and a resident of North Northeast Portland. Was the co-chair of the Interstate Urban Renewal Advisory Committee and wanted to come and also sat on the initiative committee as well, Northeast Initiative. I am wanting to say something that I think is real important that a number of you mentioned. $32 million is not a lot of money, especially for the need that is in the community. And though we had the whole TIF funding stream at our disposal, we also had some high priority projects that were for the public good that kept getting borrowing out of the TIF so that we could do the light rail, do the Hope 6 project. So those things took funding out of the stream, so we couldn't do some of the economic development pieces. And the piece, Mayor, that was missing sometimes, quite often, was the enlightened public partnership, where we were able to say, let's use some CBG money where we can't use TIF money to provide the kind of assistance that property owners, because there was a time in the early 2000s that we had still a large number of black homeowners. They were elderly homeowners. We had a large number of blacks who owned property in the area, in the commercial areas, even along the Vancouver-Williams corridor. But we weren't able to put in place the kind of support that they needed and other dollars from other sources that could help them to develop those properties where they were commercial, be able to stay in the running long enough to find a partner to help them develop it, or for those who had property, like you were talking about, Commissioner, where they didn't understand the value of what they had and didn't realize that with some paint, a new roof, that they, a house that they may be selling to someone for $150K is really worth $400,000 or $500,000. And that's the wealth that we talk about in those families. And the last piece was we didn't tie in the job component strong enough. So because if you even if you have the property, if you don't have a job, it's going to be hard to keep the property. So those were things that I'm hoping that somehow through this process we'll not only take and see what's put together in this plan, but how we can bring together other pieces of that the city has for funding and resources that can be of help to really turn this into a project that has the potential of being a success all the way around.
Thank you. Excellent comments. And if you have specific ideas, I certainly want to hear those too offline. But I think that's a good call to action for myself and for the PDC director and others here. Thank you. Yes, sir. Looks like you get the last word.
Well, man, Lawrence, me and Lawrence.
Thank you, James. We've run out of time, but we appreciate you.
Yeah,
being,
right.
We appreciate you being here.
Right. I know you wish.
No, we appreciate you being here. Wait, why don't you submit your comments in writing, and we'll get back to you.
Wish. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Fish. I appreciate you acknowledging that. You know, there is a real challenge in discussing this issue with me because it really is close to my heart. And, you know, all the comments that were made about the small amount of money and so on, et cetera, it's really frustrating for me because you all know it's nice for PDC to acknowledge they've done some things wrong and they've invested in the wrong place, spend money the wrong way. It's nice to have all those confessions and acknowledgments, but at the end of the day, we're still in bad shape and this plan does very little to correct that. You commented about the small amount of money and the jostling between this money and that money. We're not going to get there. with this money, and you all know it, and the community is really insulted by the context of putting out this small amount of money and talking about all these goals and so forth. There is really an insult. And for people to talk about not understanding the difference between a grant and a loan, we're insulted by that. We know what the difference between a grant and a loan, and we need a hell of a lot of them both in big ways. In fact, I want to suggest to you all, we really need a Marshall Plan. I'm going to say that again, a Marshall Plan for Northeast Portland. The people who have been ran out of that community are really, I just don't know what to tell you how insulting it is for you all to go back